How many of you are guys? And the rest of you? What's... You're the one that keep the whole planet straightened up. That's what it is. So thank you. I'm so glad that you're here. Dads, thank you for being here.
Hey, Dads. And,
hey, Dads. You know what? Hey, Dads. That was the one that you missed with the sound, but that's okay. You are here at a very wonderful and special time. We are in our last message of our series, Future Family. And so we've been going through talking about that. And, of course, family is not an emotionally neutral topic. Raising kids is one of the biggest challenges in life. It requires all of our strengths, all of our talents, and it makes us very keenly aware of our weaknesses as well. Reminds us on a daily basis. It's kind of interesting. I taught school for a while before I had teenagers and thought, piece of cake, right? I went to a seminary and I thought, I'm gonna get a degree focused in marriage and family counseling, and I'm gonna do it. And I wasn't thinking of doing counseling. I was really thinking of it because I thought this will help me in life when I someday get married. I meet somebody, get married. This is gonna help me, right? I found one person in the whole planet that it doesn't help, and that's me, right? You can't counsel yourself, right? So there have even been times when we were first married, my wife would say, "Don't counsel me." It's like, okay, so same thing's true with, you know, having kids. You know, you throw the book out when it's your own, right? So anyway, we're going to talk about, today we're going to share some things that's, really that Cindy and I don't usually run my messages by her and have her read them, but today I did. I was going to have her join me up here, but she says, what am I going to say? She says, well, at the end they can ask questions if they want. So. Maybe I should just let you guys, you can even ask my kids questions. Let me ask you, you know, thinking back, rewinding the tape, can you remember, and some of you are really young, so can you remember the household rules you had growing up, some things you had, some rules? And even now, your current thinking, whether you're out on your own or whether you've got your own family or whatever, how have those rules influenced your current family life? All the ways that, you know, as parents, that we discipline our children or plan, or those of you not yet married, plan to discipline your children. I wonder how similar those are to those that, you know, you had when you were growing up. Our style, Cindy is in our style, was really a morphing of two families. Her family, you know, had a certain style, mine had a certain style, and we kind of morphed those together and some of what we share. Now, I've called this message, Our Way is a Way. I didn't put our way as the way. It's the only way. It's like, here's a way, you know? So if you don't like it, that's okay, because a lot of this isn't Bible. This is just stuff that I've learned. We're going to share this in the context. I'm going to share with you the biblical context for where I always wanted to be as a parent and really what helped to guide me. And sometimes I knew exactly what that looked like. Now, some of you are single. Some of you are young. Some of you are grandparents. Let me assure you, some of you are aunts and uncles. Let me assure you, some of the stuff you're going to learn is going to help in family in general. This isn't just about, okay, here's how to be a successful parent. Some of this is going to help you as a family member, okay? So, and you'll understand as we get going here. Again, while Cindy and I grew up with both of our parents, we grew up in a very traditional home. Mom, Dad, both there, you know. Mom was homemaker. Dad worked. That was both of ours. We both had the blessing. My mom's parents lived to be, you know, an old age. Her parents, grandparents on her dad's side lived to be very old, as well as on her mother's. So we have really kind of a ideal cookie cutter kind of background. Some of you came from what we call broken homes in society, or you had a single parent or whatever. Some of you lost a parent when you were very young. And so I don't want to say that I'm any moral authority on any of these different kinds of things this different kinds of situations. But, you know, I'm looking at you. This is the intelligent people that showed up today. The not so sharp ones stayed home. Oh, don't tell them I said that. Okay, I'm just kidding. But you're going to be able to take this and transfer this to your situation. Some of you are not married yet. You're single. And you think, well, great. What a day to show up, a parenting day. This will help you. If you are around children, if you influence children, if you work in our children's ministry, okay, Some of this stuff's going to help you. I promise you that. I'm not standing behind the pulpit because I wanted to feel relaxed like a dad instead of like a preacher. So, because you know I'm kind of hellfire and brimstone, you guys know. But thank you for laughing. I would have been concerned if you hadn't. But I love you, and I care about you. And there was even a couple of things that Cindy and I were talking about, something I heard just this last week. And Cindy said, she goes, man, I wish I had heard that years ago. So, and I'll share that with you, some things that, you know, it's never too late for adjustment. If you're on this side of heaven, okay, you're always okay. But I want to start off looking at Psalm 127, verse 3. And by the way, if you're a guest here, first of all, welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you'll come back. I traditionally will put a listening guide in here. I don't want that to be distracting. That's for your help, not distraction. If that feels like teenagers, if that feels too much like school, okay? But if that's helpful to you, there may be some things. I don't have a very good memory, so I like to have things to jot down so I can have it for future reference. It might be of help to you. So anyway, I love this in Psalm 127:3, and in putting this last thing together, it's the very first verse I thought of, and I just thought, if nothing else, I want to share that children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him. And in Old Testament context, that was very true historically, but and even relationally. But, you know, sometimes in our society, we don't see how wonderful they are. And, you know, with Cindy and I, when we had basically two goals for raising our kids. If I look back, these are two goals that we hadn't really verbalized much, but we talked about these two goals as goals that these are two things that you know, she said, yep, that's what we want. Neither of these have to do with anything to do with the way they behaved. Nothing to do with, you know, how outstanding they did in school or how, whatever. This had nothing to do with it. There were two goals that we have, and that is, number one, we want to look forward to enjoyable adult relationships with our kids. And we're starting to have that, really. You know, I mean, Janelle's 23, Brittany's 20, so it's like, we're seeing that. We're enjoying that adult, these adult relationships. And of course, there's a part of you as a dad, you always kind of feel like they're your little girls. But you know, they're moving on. It's kind of crazy. But we want to raise them in a way that they would want to come back. You've met parents and you've met kids who have said, "I can hardly wait to get out of this house, and I'm never coming back." And I know kids that have left their house and never went back. And I always thought that was not only incredibly sad, but heartbreaking. I always want them, you know, to be able to feel like they came back. Cindy's family modeled this very, very well. Now, of all of her three sisters, she has three sisters. We have three girls. She's one of three girls. Her older sister has three girls. We are overrun with women. Which, as a guy, there's worse things to be overrun with, you know. And we live the farthest away because we live all the way 2.2 miles away from her parents. So we live the farthest away. So we have to kind of commute to her parents' house and we have barbecues and stuff. You know, they really model this so well that the family love being together. And if, you know, they're getting together and you're not there, it's kind of like you're missing out. And so that is something really, really precious to us. And while that isn't always ideal, especially with careers and jobs and so situations, you know, I've always kind of dreamed and hoped and prayed that, you know, at least my kids, if they weren't super, super close, that, you know, we'd always stay close enough that we have the really close connection. And so I'm going to let them 2.3 or 4 miles away if they want, you know. They can really go far. But the second thing that's really important, and this isn't necessarily an order, that we really wanted to help our kids with is to have children who feel accountable to God and seek his will for their lives. My parents modeled this wonderfully. They constantly reminded us that, and this made a huge difference in my life. I'm probably in ministry because they were constantly saying, you know, you got to just be sensitive to what does God want for you? What does God want for your life? And that's, again, a principle that applies to every single one of us. It doesn't matter what stage of life you are. You say, well, yeah, but I'm already retired or whatever. What is God's plan for you right now? And making that a daily prayer is vitally important. God, what do you have for me today? What is your will for me today? I remember even when I was considering college, my parents gave me no guidelines. They said, you know, you pray about it. God's going to let you. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But one of the things that was interesting, she said, my mom remembers saying, pray for God's will this year. Don't say, God, what do you want for the next 4 years? Where do you want me this year? Even, where do you want me this semester? And so many times we want to just say, God, okay, where do you want me for the rest of my life? And God doesn't always answer that way. Like he told Abraham, he says, go toward this way. And Abraham, where am I going? He says, I'll tell you when you get there. And so that's how we have to follow God. But I watched my folks cherish and love God's word, love prayer, and love relying on him. Proverbs 22:6 says this. It says, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. Some of you maybe have heard that, train up your children in the way they should go. And many times we emphasize that training, and instead of in the way they should go. God treats us each uniquely. And, our three girls, they have some similarities in the way they look. They're all beautiful blondes. But they're all so different, and they have different paths, and they have different gifts, and they have different things. So I wanted to, my goal is to train them in and help them in the way they should go and that responsibility. Now, hopefully this will help some of you, if you've got younger kids, some of you who fear your kids, and you say, oh, I'll never fear my kids. Yes, you will. You may not now, but one day you will. Well, you should. One day they're going to pick your rest home, right? So, there's a little respect that should come there, right? I don't know if it's a dad thing with girls or whatever, but one of the common fears we have is that our kids won't like us. And here's the deal. They may not like you now, but they'll like you later. Eventually they'll like you. And what I wanted us to remember is something really important, because I haven't learned this yet from the standpoint of hey, this is all, I've got it all together. I'm beginning this. And that is to remember that. And some of you who have kids and grandkids who have, left, later is longer. So Janelle's 23. So from this stage on is longer than from birth to when I've had her, I've now, I've pretty much almost been at Hillside half my life. It's hard to believe, 52, so I've been here, it'll be 25 years, that's hard to believe, kind of crazy. But that later part, that later section of life, it's hard to remind ourselves, because we see little kids, I see little girls, and I think, oh, I want to rewind the tape and go back. But this next section of time is even longer. And we learned from, Cindy and I learned from reading stuff, from listening to Dr. Dobson on the radio. Is he still on? I don't know. I think somebody took him over. But and in working with teenagers, we did that here, as well as, another church. But and one of the sad things we watched is we watched parents lose kids. Most heartbreaking thing for me to watch is watching parents and children not grow and go on, okay, cut the umbilical cord and move, but just disconnect, and that's what's sad. So let me go through this real quick. Some stages of life, stages of parenting. From 1 to 5 is the discipline years. From 5 to 12 is what I'd call the training years. From ages 12 to 18 are coaching years. And 18 and older are, I call, friendship years. Now, they all overlap. Okay, this is not a light switch thing. This isn't, okay, happy 12th birthday. You're now moved on to the coaching. No. You'll do some of this together all the way through. Because there's been some times when my kids have come they may be 17 years old, and they say, well, hey, Dad, I need some help with this, or I need some training in this, or whatever. So there's those times. These overlap. But remember, these are seasons. They don't last forever. And depending on the stage you're in, you'll treat your children differently. You'll tend to loosen up and not loosen up. I'll give you an example. When my kids were really, really little, when they rode on their bikes, they wore a helmet. Now, I may suggest it, and it may or may not happen. No, it won't happen. Sorry. It just won't. But you know, you give some little coaching, some suggestions, but it's as a friend. I would say that to a friend. I'd say, hey, you know what? Steep hill down there. Watch you, you know. But that was just a random illustration. This came off the top of my head. All right, that wasn't fair. Because they can't stand up here and tell stuff, you know. That'd probably really be interesting. But where I've seen parents really mess up, and looking at this, is they won't really do it in the first stage. They won't discipline, you know, from 1 to 5. And then they won't really do that great of a job in the second stage of doing discipline. Because, you know, while they're small, while you can still plop them into bed and say, there, you're going to stay in that bed, and that's it. You know, while you can still manhandle them, you know, it's okay. It's okay. But then when they're 12 years old, when they get in middle school, and I mean, have you noticed middle schoolers these days? They're big. They're giant. They're tall. If you've got boys, you know, it's 6 foot, you know, middle schoolers. What's with that? Then you say, well, now I've got to start disciplining. Now, too late. It doesn't work very effectively. So it never, when you try to start disciplining, and you know, we do this out of desperation, where we get to junior high and it's like, wow, they become their own little person. Now I've got to start disciplining them. If we didn't start at the beginning, you know, and don't misunderstand what I say about discipline. I'm not saying, oh, he's talking about, you know, let them have it. Talk about spanking them or talking about, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm really talking about disciplining them, just like God disciplines us when we mess up or when we're doing the right thing as well. See, by the time our kids are driving, the parenting's pretty much done, and you're coaching. There's a lot of great electronics, GPS, and whatever, and you can try to sneak your kids and whatever. But let me tell you, by the time they get to that point, we're coaching. But those stages are really vital, and I think, again, you analyze the maturity of your own kids, and that makes a difference. I've also seen parents who wanted to be friends too early. If I had a fault, that's probably one of the things. Would you say that's probably something? Probably I would have the tendency. I wanted to be friends too early. I wanted to be able to punish them when they needed to be and discipline them when they needed to be, but also have them like me. And Cindy was much better at that, just making those boundaries, and that was really, really important. But I heard a parent say recently, you can't be a friend with a middle schooler. You just can't be a friend with a middle schooler. If you're a parent, you can't be. Well, you know what I mean? They're going through a maturity stage. So, but remember, later is longer. And so, and now you can, you know, wear yourselves out trying to know when to discipline. There you go. I wanted to share a couple of passages. Exodus chapter 20, verse 12 says, honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. Now, I want to ask you, I'm going to throw this out. Where, in what famous section of the Bible is that found? I'll set it up this way. This is one of the, some of you, yes, Ten Commandments. We always say, oh, I live by the Ten. And do you know one of the Ten Commandments is for us to honor our parents, honor your father and mother, so that you may live long in the land. And he says that the Lord's giving you. When he gave this to the children of Israel, this was important. There was killing, no killing, no adultery, don't envy, do all. Oh, and honor your mom and your dad. That God saw that as that crucial. In Proverbs 13:24, one of the most misunderstood passages in all the Bible. Proverbs 13:24 says, those who spare the rod of discipline hate their children. Those who love their children care enough to discipline them. And sometimes people say, rod, okay, that's a good verse that teaches corporeal punishment, teaches spanking. Couldn't. You know, it says the rod of discipline. You know, it's the same one in Psalm 23 where God says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Do you picture that? Is it discipline? Yes. Is that, you know, can sometimes spanking? Are there times we spank? Not a lot. Did we ever? Yeah. There were times when we did. Was it effective? Not usually. There are usually other things, and we'll talk about some of the discipline things we've learned in just a minute. But three attitudes or actions that we kind of said, this is things we have to discipline. This is the things that are most. And this is what will help you, whether you're a grandparent, whether you're an aunt or an uncle, whether you work with, you know, kids or whatever. Three things that we really have as a guideline. First one was disobedience. And let me say, learn to distinguish between disobedience with immaturity or childishness. We got this from Dr. Dobson. I remember when we were just new parents, him saying, don't punish childishness or immaturity. We teach maturity. You discipline to obedience, you know. And sometimes kids are just being goofy kids. And other times they're being, you know, disobedient, defiant. The other thing that we, another thing that we did was dishonesty. And if you have more than one child in your home, you probably have a good liar and a bad liar. Right? Okay, I'm seeing some nods, right? And what do I mean by that? I'm not saying that they tell good lies, but I'm saying is there's some people that they can lie and you would just bet the farm they're telling the truth. And then there's others that lie and you can read right through them. And it's just kind of almost funny. But that is, dishonesty is crucial. The third one is disrespect. And while I would say I didn't do this perfectly, we didn't do this perfectly, our girls have said that they can think of things that they didn't do. They just told me this week. They said that we can think of things we didn't do, not because we were afraid of a punishment, but really because we didn't want to disappoint you. And that was really cool to hear. Now, let me say this, too. I saw this just this last week. I see parents who will discipline their kids because they're annoying. Right? Right? Making a noise. They're that little boy. Going, Johnny, stop that. Stop that. I said, stop that. Stop that. Right? Am I telling you? Because they're annoying, spinning around. Would you quit that? Would you keep that? Would you stop? You know, and it's like, what are they doing? They're being a little kid, you know. And so this is one of the things that, you know, Cindy and I, we decided we're going to pick our battles. And so, our kids never did anything annoying, so I'm really just going on theory. But you know, sometimes noise, how many of you say, I'm the kind of person that noise bothers? Okay, anybody? Yes, thank you. I see that hand. Thank you. God bless you. See, I don't mind noise. I don't mind happy noise. Happy noise. I'm a happy noise. I don't mind if it just can be really loud, but if it's happy. You know, some of you, you're just like, oh, it's just, I just don't want any more noise. It's probably you moms, because you get it so much. You know, just always noise. And just want a little peace and quiet. We have to be so careful because that's not a point of discipline, you know. That may be a point of educating. You know, it's like, you know what, mommy's really tired or whatever. Could you play quietly or whatever? But disciplining them just because they're doing something annoying. I mean, hello, how many of us did something annoying when we were a kid? Yeah, I probably could write the book when I was a kid about doing stuff annoying. But now there really is a biblical context to this. I'm not just saying, sharing, okay, here's some random stuff we thought. Because God wants us to refer to him as he's our heavenly father. He wants us to cherish him as our heavenly father. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6 says, for the Lord disciplines those, say it, those he loves. And he punishes each one he accepts as his child. Honestly, as a pastor, now I'm talking spiritually, as a pastor, I fear more people who are not being punished by God than people who are. If I see somebody who's kind of under God's discipline, I feel really good about that because I know God loves them, God's one. But when a person can get away with anything, it doesn't seem like God's really disciplining. I mean, God so loved the world, but it's like, wow, God is just letting them, you know, self-destruct. And so that is really a difficult thing. But when it comes to discipline, here's the bottom line goal. The bottom line goal, and it's the same with God. This is the God's purpose for us. Discipline is all about reestablishing broken relationships. Why does God discipline you when you're goofing up? He wants to reestablish that relationship. See, God disciplines those he loves, as we just read. And the cross shows that he was willing to do anything to make sure that relationship was restored. Anything. I mean, if God could have done anything else, he would have done anything else. But God so loved the world, God so loved you that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him and trusts him will not perish but have everlasting life. So, so very, very important. The cross shows us he was willing to do anything he needed to restore our relationship with him. Now ask yourself that question. I want to ask myself this question as you raise kids: how can I discipline in a way that will restore the broken relationship? This will really affect the way you discipline them. Now, as they get older, it gets hard to discipline somebody who's as big as you are, right? Those of you who have boys or strong girls, I think Brittany could probably beat me up, But you know, when somebody's stronger, some of you got boys, and you go, what do you do? How do you discipline? I mean, they could turn it around on you if they really, really wanted to. I remember my mom, because my mom's only 5 foot even, you know, remember, and she was never weighed over 100 pounds the whole time we were growing up. And we'd pick her up. She'd be in the kitchen. We'd pick her up and move her, and she'd laugh. And then she'd tell us something. You know, she'd discipline and get in our face, and it was like, how can this tiny little person have so much strength? But what do you do with a person who can get in a car and drive away? I know parents who only know how to do one thing. You knew kids like this at school. The kid was always on restriction. You know this, right? Maybe you were that kid. Always on restriction. They were always on restriction. Because as soon as they got back on restriction, I mean, they had so much pent-up energy, they did something else and back on restriction. And it never worked. The whole restriction thing never works. Well, here's one reason why, is when you put one kid on restriction, guess what? The whole family's on restriction. It's like, great. I remember being on restriction as a kid and my brother going, would you let David off restriction so we can go, you know? And it just messes up everybody's life. But the most common one, what's the most common? I'm going to take your cell phone away. I'm going to take your Facebook away. Take your computer away. Take your something, right? Some electronic gadget. I'm going to take something. Which often has absolutely nothing to do with the offense. Now, if it did, then that's a really effective one. I mean, if they're doing something bad with their phone or bad with their computer or whatever. But especially with older kids, we have to ask, what can I do? Or what kind of discipline would be best to help mend this broken relationship, you know? And some of you are thinking about your cell phones. You go, oh, yeah, that would be the most cruel and unusual punishment, not having my cell phone. What would I do? Some of you are shaking, even thinking about it. Proverbs 29:17, though, says, discipline your children, and they'll give you peace. Peace of mind. Not necessarily peace and quiet, but peace of mind, and will make your heart glad. I'm living in that stage, some of that right now, you know, you're just seeing that seeing them make good decisions, and it's really a blessing. But here's a couple of life-shaping principles. Now, this is for all of us. You don't have to be a parent. You could be a single person with never anticipation of any kind of marriage or kids or whatever. But every single one of us is who we are as a result of two things we've received. I think this is why God communicates so clearly that we're beloved by him, that we're accepted by him, because of two things we've received: acceptance and rejection. Rejection and acceptance. And as we know, I mean, this begins at home, and I don't mean this to sound Freudian. I am not Freudian in my philosophy at all. You know, Freudian's the guy who says, you know, if you blame your parents because your mom dropped you on your head when you were a baby. But we are who we are as an adult is somewhat a result of that combination of acceptance and rejection that we received as a child. It shaped our soul. And in some ways, it shapes our personality. It certainly shapes our different responses to situations. That's why we see similarities. My kids will see similarities as they like that. They'll say things like, that was such a grandma thing you just did. Or that was such a grandpa thing you just said. You know, why? Because I was raised by grandma and grandpa. I called them mom and dad, but, you know, but that shapes us. And that shaped you as well. And it certainly does that. So now, in that whole rejection and acceptance things, there's two things in our lives on an everyday basis that really inform, that really communicate these two things. And that is number, for especially as parents, I think, in our relationships in general. One is words, and second is the schedules we keep. So the words we use and the schedule we choose. My greatest regrets in parenting have absolutely nothing to do with disciplining or rules. My greatest regrets in parenting are words that I wish that had never come out of my mouth. My greatest regrets. And let me say this, even though they may have been true, okay? Didn't matter they were true. They rejected my children. And when you were a kid, your parents may have, remember when your parents had those talks? Son, now never forget. I always forgot those things. I can't tell you one thing that my dad said. Son, now never forget. We always forget that stuff. What we do remember are the words that were said in the rejection category. Those, we don't want to, but we remember them vividly. They cut like a knife, even though they may have been true. Our parents may have said may have been true, they cut us. And too many times as parents, we focus on telling our kids the truth instead of what do my kids need to hear? And what should my kids never hear from me? Now, I'm not talking about lying, but there's just some things, right? Have you heard people talking about gossip? You know, and they'll go, but it's true, but it's not helpful, you see. And so asking that question. So that's what I've kind of put there as another thought for us is this. Decide what they need to hear and say it 10 times more than you think they need to hear it. Do you think your kids need to hear that you love them? Yeah. Okay. Say it, but say it 10 times more than you think that you should, you know. That they've done a good job, that you love them, that you care about them, that you'll always be there for them. Just communicate, because sometimes we say, well, I told them that, last week, last month? Say it 10 times more than you need to hear it. The fact of the matter is, those of you who are parents, your kids know that you love them in your heart. But they really don't know until we love them in our schedule. And they can't see our heart, but they can see our schedule. And you may have to give up something for a season. I did this when we were first married. There was a golf course over in San Ramon that used to let pastors play for free on Mondays. And so I'd get up, you know, go play or whatever. And it was like a whole day. And then I was tired because Sunday I was tired. Monday I'm tired anyway. And then I'd be tired from that. And I was just like, blah, nothing. I'm still tired on Mondays. That hasn't changed. But I just thought, you know, I could do something better. And that's for a season. There may be things you give up for a season. It's not like you have to give them up for the rest of your life. But there may just be some things that you may or may not do. If you aren't able to spend time with them during the week, some of you work like crazy. I mean, Monday through Friday, it's craziness. And so sometimes the weekends need to be just about the kids and spending time with them. And obviously, weekends are crazy for me. I don't really have a weekend like that. So I don't have a really, obviously, Sunday. I always crack up when people say, oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't there at church on Sunday. I had to work. And I say, that's okay. I had to work too, you know. So one of the things that, but parenting is such a short season, and the days might feel long, but the years really, really fly by. When my kids were young, my wife was so good at this, is when they were little, we always had dinner together. She would always make dinner. Even now, she makes dinner a lot of the nights, and probably more than the average. And Cindy cooked dinner every night. In fact, I was the biggest problem. Kids were fine. I was the biggest problem between, you know, counseling appointments here at the church and so forth and different activities. But both of our families modeled this very, very well. Her family during the week. Dinner was, you know, they were together as a family. And when I was a kid, we were together as a family. And our best conversations happened then. Some of our best, you know, training happened then. And coaching even happened then. So here's some random parenting stuff I hope will help you. There was one rule in our house that was, we started as, when they were just little kids. And this was vitally important. Our rule number one was, thou shalt not lie. And the reason why that was so important was because we knew lying broke the relationship. Satan is called the father of lies, you know. And of everything that is in our life, that probably is the biggest one that we always should remember. So that was really huge. I mean, everything else, disobedience, disrespect, we can deal with all, we can work through any other wrong. But once lying starts happening there, that's when the progress stops. I see this in marriage counseling. There is nothing. I don't care what people bring in. There is nothing that bothers me more as a pastor, as a person who does counseling, more than a couple or person who comes in and they lie to me. You know, it's like, hey, because you know why? Because you can't be helpful when there's lying going on. So that's the progress stops. Okay, doesn't matter how horrible things are or whatever. I have seen marriages end over lying. You say, well, it's probably lying about something. I've seen marriages where there was confession of unfaithfulness, of horrible things, you know, whatever. And I literally remember one wife saying years ago, when they finally broke up, and he said, I know, it's all the money, because he was an addict, and you know, about $100,000 was gone, blah, blah, blah. And she said, I don't care about that. It's all the lying. And that's what destroyed the marriage. So in the context of God being our heavenly Father, and he disciplines us, enter in the gospel. Be always mindful of the gospel. As Christians, what we have experienced is this. When Jesus died on the cross and was buried and rose again, when God sent Jesus for us, what God has done is God has sided with us against our sin. See, when we sin, God is grieved. He's grieved because of the consequences we face, because of the separation it brings, because of the scars that it brings in our lives. And the cross is the evidence that God has sided with us against sin. Now, this is the principle I was saying at the beginning that I think really can shape our parenting, can shape our relationships very, very much, is when our kids sin against us, but they're being disobedient, being dishonest, disrespectful, and they do those things that make us mad, and you know, you have those times you just want to get in their face, you just want to explode and let them have it. If we can remember as parents that we should do what God has done for us and figure out how we can side with our children against their disobedience, that's crucial. Now, there's two words, and this is what I was telling you when I was sharing this with Cindy. I heard this just recently, and I was sharing this with Cindy, and she goes, man, I wish I had heard this, you know, years ago. You can express to your kids, or really to grandkids or whatever, whenever discipline's necessary, you can express you are on their side by saying two words. Oh, no. If I can say this, then I'm siding with my kids, even though there have to be consequences. Oh, no. Now you're going to have to apologize to them. Oh, no. Now you're going to have to pay them back. Oh, no. Now you're not going to be able to go to this thing you would really look forward to. You see? You're communicating, I'm not mad at you. I'm grieved with you because of these consequences. None of you delight in punishing your children, those of you who are parents. None of you delight in that. Here's where we've seen this. If you've had little ones, okay, and you've had to punish a little one, and they're crying or whatever, and then you scoop them up into your arms, you pat them on, you know, you're holding them. You tell them it's going to be okay after you've just made them cry, okay? What are you doing? You're siding with them. You're saying, I'm sorry there were consequences to this bad decision you made. You know, I'm speaking more a little older context, but I'm with you. And that was just a way of saying, I'm sorry, there's consequences. You're just, with, oh, no. See? That's not a gimmick, okay? You understand. I think you're sensing it. It's a heart thing. This needs to be carried out and carried out through the whole entire relationship. I've done this as a pastor when I've had people come in and say, Pastor, you won't, I got to tell you something I did. And that's the way I feel, oh no, you know. Number three, and I'm going to use my kids' vernacular, and I got this from a great book years ago by a gal, and I forgot her name, but very important principle, don't freak out. Okay? Don't freak out. Too often when our kids tell us stuff, we react. And freaking out will shut them down. So you just say, really? Just really? Oh. So the fire department had to come. Okay. All right. Oh. All right. So the whole back section. All right. Okay. Don't freak out. Hey, good things or bad things. Now, especially if you have sons. Now, girls are a little more, if they tell you something good, you can get excited for them. But guys, did you like that? But guys, boy, but right? Those of you with sons, you know, the sons come in, they tell you something, and it's like, and you want to, especially you moms, you want to go, yeah, oh yeah, let's have a party, bake a cake. They'll let you bake a cake, but just do it mellow. But, you know, it's like, so don't freak out. Sometimes my kids have told us stuff, and of course, then later, Cindy and I go in our rooms and go, can you believe they told us that? But you know what's really cool? I'm putting some fun stuff in there, but what's really great is they have felt the freedom to share things with us that I would have never shared with my parents, honestly. This is on tape, isn't it? Oh, man, they're going to see this. No, seriously, why? Because, try not to freak out. I probably should have said that, try not to freak out, because, you know. But again, let them talk. Let them share. And then, you know, you can come back. It's like, hey, you know that situation you were telling me about where the police came and the fire department and, you know, those people got ushered off to the emergency? Remember that? There's probably a better way we could have handled that, you know, right? So anyway, having some fun there. Here's something vitally important. Just another random kind of thought, and that is this. Don't bail. Let them fail. Don't always rush in and make everything okay. Now, I'm probably, as dad of daughters, probably the one who is most had to learn this, and this isn't easy. That is, sometimes we want to make sure they don't make any mistakes or don't get hurt. You have to allow them to make mistakes, even when the person, maybe a teacher, a principal, a coach, is wrong. See, you can go in and you could go to the defense, or you can take that opportunity to teach them, what do you do when an authority makes an unjust decision? How do you handle that? See, that's two different approaches. You can go into the rescue, put on your tights and cape, and go in there as super parent and rescue them all the time. And one is, hey, I'm going to side with you, and that's it, and they're not going to talk to my baby girl that way. All right? So what do we do when even a Christian authority doesn't treat you right, makes a bad decision, and you're under that authority? That was something, when Janelle was at Sac State, that was something really important, because she got to Sac State and there was one particular teacher who was very, very unfair. Deceitfully liberal. Not just liberal, but I mean just crazy liberal. And treated Janelle poorly because of that, because she was a raving liberal and Janelle wasn't. And there was a part of me, I want to drive to that Sacramento. That's only an hour and a half. I could be there in an hour and 10 minutes. And there's a part of me, but there was a really great lesson and a really important lesson and kind of a stirring in her life that took place. And that takes discipline and balance to not rush in. When they're younger, even more so. Now, when do you go in? You know, whenever their safety is at stake, you know. If your fourth grader comes home and says, you wouldn't believe the experiment we did at school today. Oh, yeah, that's right. They had to call everybody. There's that point. But there's sometimes we just have to let them have this, you know, have it. We did this even in their dating days. As a dad, I always pictured myself before having daughters. I always pictured myself with my big, you know, my thumb on there, you know, and kind of with a twitch, you know, polishing a rifle, kind of, you know, that kind of thing. But even if they dated somebody we weren't that thrilled about, we didn't freak out. Because some of you have experienced this. I experienced this one time where my parents were not happy. This girl was a Christian, but wasn't happy with somebody I was dating. And it kept us together longer because of that pressure from them. We were going to prove that it was going to work. It didn't, thankfully. But it was like if we had just let it go and that relationship had run its course. Now, it's not that they come for us for advice or our opinion. Sure, we would give that. But we let that relationship, those relationships, fail on their own. Going into that too, number five there, it's just these random thoughts. One is let them pursue their own dreams. Now, this is probably only significant if people have a family business, or maybe you were in a career. If I had a son, the pressure to go into ministry, you've seen that, right? I mean, you're Joe Montana's son. What are you going to do? teach knitting? Probably not, you know, right? That kind of pressure. So we decided we're not going to put that kind of pressure on our kids. I never pursued, my girls didn't even pursue some kind of ministry or career path or even a specific college. We let the Lord lead them through that. And so that's you know, pursuing their own dreams. That was very, very important. I want to give you one last random thought. And this is probably the most important one that you'll hear all morning. Okay, so if you forget everything else, if you've got little children, remember this one. Get an alarm. Now, that's not funny to you. But we just discovered this week that if we hadn't had an alarm, there would have been times they would have snuck out. And so I always thought that an alarm was to keep the bad people out. It wasn't. It was to keep the good people in. They knew that because we got a pad right by our bed that if we heard dee, 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 it's like that was it. So I tried to find a Bible verse. Thank you, God, for the alarm. But that's just, there it is. So if you're afraid of your kids sneaking out, see, they're old enough, they can admit these kind of things now because, you know, so. But let's, as we kind of wind this down, I wanted to talk about faith and family because that is so important. How do we raise our kids to follow Jesus? I mentioned that beginning. I mean, adult relationships, you know, that they would come back and enjoy this and that they would follow God and what God led for them. That's so vitally important for us. And one of the things, just some convictions of ours is one, we really, and maybe I'm saying this as a pastor, and maybe I needed to clarify this because of being a pastor, but we always really, really believe that what happens at home is more important than what happens at church. What happens at home is much more important than what happens at church. My two older girls told us that, you know, told me that something that helped them in their Christian life was that I didn't force them to go to Bible study, to go to youth groups, or even church when they got older. That was optional. And that was a struggle for me. I was raised in a home where if the church doors were open, we were there, you know. And then you think as a pastor, I mean, here it is, so much of my world revolves around this. And I realized, hey, this isn't the most important thing that happens in their life. I mean, you see me once a week, many of you see me once a week, and you have the perception, wow, he's just an easygoing, fun guy all the time. They see the real life, my daily life, and the grind, and the disappointments, and the discouragements, and, you know, the anger that shouldn't be there at times, and all these things that happen. And we realized that was so much more important for them to see that I love Jesus anyway, even though I really blow it sometimes. And again, part of this is probably because I'm a pastor, but I never, ever wanted to confuse my kids, never confuse following Christ with living up to the church's expectations. So I just, you know, and I was probably harder on Cindy with that than the kids, which was wrong. I look back and I have some regrets that way. But what happens at home, much, much more important. Second thing, we've always assumed responsibility for our children's faith development. Now, I have to say this, and you may become suddenly disappointed in me. We never had a set family devotion time. And I think that's great. If you do that, keep it up. And that works. That's awesome. Now, we had times when we did that. We'd get together and have family, when they were little, family Bible study or meeting or whatever. But never did we do this on a regular basis. Were we able to do that? Now, from the time the kids were young, and I mean practically born, I went in and I prayed with them, or Cindy did, but a lot of times it was me, by their bed every night. And when they got older and homework kicked in, 11, 12 years old, about, you know, middle school, when the homework started kicking in, they started maturing and so forth, you know, that didn't happen so much. I still, even now they're home for, you know, break, I still like to go to their room, tell them I love them and good night and that. But I wanted to always, as when they were kids, while I knew I had that time, is make that connection. And sometimes kids and I would all get in trouble from Cindy because we would goof around and tickle too much and all that, but I don't regret one single minute of all that. I think our goal, and I hope it would be yours for your kids, is number three. Our goal is for our kids to own their faith, not ours. Their journeys have been different. It's a little unnerving. Some of you have had teenagers, you know, it's a little unnerving when your kids say stuff like, well, I don't know what I believe. And you go, wait a minute. You've been going to church. We've been, you know, telling you about Jesus since you were born. And you accepted Jesus when you were 6 years old. And wait, what? Refer back to Don't Freak Out. You know, hey, that they need to do that. They need to go, really? Is what Dad says really? Is that really true? I mean, I know he preaches on Sunday and all that, but... And I'll tell you, the girls said this last week. They said they've always said that we've always made it clear to them that following the Lord was a personal choice, not something we were going to force, not something that we did as a family. Some of you know people who are a certain religion or certain go to a certain church because, well, hey, you know, I'm Italian, of course I'm, you know, this or that, right? You know, this is my family. We grew up this way. This faith was their personal. When we say that people accept Christ as their personal Savior, we mean individually. Fourth, is take every opportunity to explain how your faith impacts your everyday life and decisions. This is really what's great about counseling you, guys, is when you come to my office or when you send me emails about all your problems, I tell them all about them. And it's really, I don't do that. Had some of you scared, huh? No, I don't do that. But, you know, I do try to share with them my own frustrations. And I think it's one of the reasons why they haven't hated me being a pastor. I know pastors' kids who have hated that their dad was a pastor. And they've said, we've never hated that. And I think it's because I've tried to stay real, be honest. When I have frustrations, just share them with them. And I think that's, you know, sometimes, you know, I am able to share illustrations very vaguely of things, you know. It's like, oh, I was in a situation or was at the hospital and this is really sad. And they know I've prayed for people and worked with people and whatever. And sometimes they haven't been, they've been public. People have known about it. But seriously, I do try to find situations in life, even in the news. We've talked about that in the world and in their situations where we can understand. Janelle took a class at Berean Christian called Understanding the Times that was really helpful to understand sometimes the world's twisted perspective on stuff. And when she got to, especially when she got to SAC, she goes, man, they really say some of that stuff. And it was just really helping our kids understand what they're going to be facing. So what would I say to those of you with younger kids? Don't let church be their only spiritual component. On a daily basis, demonstrate your faith. Talk about what you give to, what you're invested in. Talk about your struggles. Invite your kids to pray. My kids have prayed about stuff for me, about situations for me. You know, I mean, I pray for them with everything I know about that I can think of. I pray for them. But it's like, have them pray for you. Number five, part of helping kids develop spiritual growth, spirituality involves teaching them to monitor their heart. And that's what really sitting by the bed was. How you doing? I'll still do that, you know, and I'm not leading questions. I'll say, hey, how you doing? You doing okay? But, you know, in their heart, they need to be able to ask themselves, is everything okay in my heart? Anybody hurt, you know, or whatever? And I love it, you know, Janelle and Brittany are at school together now at TCU. And they've even shared some stuff, you know, back and forth, you know, about their relationship with God. And that makes me so incredibly, you know, grateful. Bottom line is that we want our girls to see how faith intersects with real life. And that's what I think all of our kids want to see. And so no matter what stage you are, there's people watching you, there's kids around you, there's family around you, and there's so much of this that you can demonstrate. If you're in the middle of the stressful years of parenting and you're sure you're going, you know, you're not going to survive, you're sure you're going to die, you're sure you're not going to make it, remember, someday it's a phase of life, it's a season, and it will end. And when it does, I'm telling you, you're going to miss it. You'll miss it when it's gone.
She was staring out the window of their SUV, complaining, saying, I can't wait to turn 18. She said, I'll make my own money and I'll make my own rules. Mama put the car in park out there in front of the school. And she kissed her head and said, I was just like you. You're gonna miss this. You're gonna want this back. You're gonna wish these days hadn't gone by so fast. These are some good times, so take a good look around. You may not know it now, but you're gonna miss this. Before she knows it, she's a brand new bride in her one-bedroom apartment, and her daddy stops by. He tells her it's a nice place. She says, it'll do for now. Starts talking about babies and buying a house. Daddy shakes his head and says, baby, just slow down. You're gonna miss this. You're gonna want this back. You're gonna wish these days hadn't gone by so fast. These are some good times, so take a good look around. You may not know it now, but you're gonna miss this. Of my own. One's 36, one's 23. It's hard to believe, but you're gonna miss this. You're gonna want this back. You're gonna wish these days hadn't gone by so fast. These are some good times, so take a good look.
Lord, thank you for...